Well, hello everybody. Again, we were supposed to record our radio show on the Saturday, but like 2 weeks ago, unforeseen technological circumstances dictated this was made virtually impossible. For some reason, we couldn't up some reason we couldn't do the radio show, even though we followed exactly the same procedures as the one we did 2 weeks ago when it worked. So instead, we decided to upload it. A few initial complications, but then we've discovered the method, and so here we are. And so I welcome you all to the second UK radio show. I'm Kevin Smith, and I'm here with Gwen. And last week, I gave a rundown of all the things I'd done that led up to the new presentation, all my various courses and quote unquote spiritual paths, etc. etc. So this week I thought I'd give Gwen the opportunity to present her timeline. And so over to you, Gwen.
Okay, right, I've got a big pile of notes here, so hopefully I can read my writing. Okay, I suppose the first thing, it's not really a spiritual path or anything, but the first thing I remember was I was very interested in Native American culture and history and things right from an early age. I had a Davy Crockett book with pictures in and story and stuff, and my mum used to read it over and over to me, and there was a Native American there that sort of sparked my interest. I still am, but it's sort of like a side thing that I do now, a hobby and stuff. Lots of things we've done together, I suppose. We used to go to the Krishna temple in Watford. Went there with Kevin and Lindsay, and I liked it. I enjoyed the experience, but to be honest, we didn't really feel we ought to be there because it was some people from India and Indian people that had come over here, and it was their thing and not really ours. There was a lot of European people there, but it still felt you were intruding on their stuff, so we stopped going to that. And I don't think Kevin really enjoyed it, and Lindsay didn't much. After that, there was a sort of gap. I read a lot of things and did a lot of things. I can't remember exactly what, but I got a job at Metmore Towers, which is a Rothschild house, huge, great place, a few miles from us. The Transcendental Meditation people had bought it after it was sold. Everything was sold off for tax duties and things when one of the owner died. It was just a cleaning job. I enjoyed it though because it's sort of cleaning huge, great rooms, no furniture left. It was just empty rooms, but they were really impressive. Gary and Kevin, that's Gary's my oldest, and Lindsay would come with me during the school holidays and run about and enjoy themselves. Ended up, obviously, we learnt TM. I think it was sort of like not exactly expected of us, but we did it anyway. It wasn't it's not a spiritual religion type thing, though some of the teachers followed sort of Hindu tradition and that sort of stuff, but they didn't bring it to the classes or to the teaching at all. I used to do it regularly. I haven't for ages now, twice a day, 20 minutes, and they've done a lot of research on it, not just the TM people, but outside people, the health service and things, and they found that it does cause you not cause just help to lower your blood pressure and sort of de-stress and things like that. I mean, I don't know really, but I used to do it a lot. We stopped going there because the job changed, so which was sad really because I liked going there. What next? Hang on, excuse me, notes, here we are. When Kevin got older, he got interested in lots of stuff, and there was a shop in St Albans, which is 20 miles away. It's a nice place, a big abbey and things. A shop called Isis, which is a bit unfortunate nowadays, but you know, it was, I think it, what is Isis? Something to
it
do
some
with
sort of goddess or something.
Goddess
from
of
some
Egypt, I think, isn't it?
I don't know, idea, something.
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, it was quite innocent then, but nowadays it isn't. I think the shop's gone. And they sold New Age stuff and did courses and things. And we did loads of courses there in a little upstairs room. Can't remember what. But I think all the little things were a one-off, a sort of tester thing to see if people were interested. We did crystal course there, crystal healing course, which was kind of nice. But I don't think either of us were really into it. We just did it more out of curiosity, really, don't you think? What?
And the crystals were exceedingly expensive.
Well, yes, they were. We didn't have to buy them, but we sort of felt we ought to, you know, as part of the thing. We did all sorts of stuff. I can't remember now. We did a tarot course there and all sorts of things. I can't remember. Anyway, we stopped going there for a while because the courses seemed to dry up a bit. And I think the shop got sold or changed hands or something. And more or less the next thing in sort of big thing we did was a shaman course in Cambridge, which is about 20 miles north of us. There's a chap there that set up a group, and he was teaching shamanism in this group. So we went along there and we did the beginner's course, I think about four times, because it got a bit expensive. And we enjoyed it. It was sort of learning about stuff. Excuse me, got a cough. Learning about stuff, sort of shamanism wise, and a bit of round dancing, not singing to music and chanting and things. And Kevin sort of had a good time with it, and I did too. We kind of we didn't treat it as a sort of joke, but we felt that sort of thing with dancing and that you should be happy and have a bit of fun with it. But I don't think the teacher really appreciated that somehow. He gave us a few black looks, if you remember. And we went a few times, but in the end, we found, I mean, the people there that went as pupils, I suppose, they were very nice people, but it ended up with, at the beginning, you sit round in a circle and say who you are and why you're there. And it ended up with people banging on, going on about what they did and how they were important at this, and one was a Maori shaman in a past life and things. And it got more like a sort of ego trip for them rather than they are learning. So I think at that point we stopped going because it was nothing wrong with the people, but we just felt, you know, it was too much. Kevin and I just used to say we're here to have a nice time and learn stuff, you know. But anyway, I set up a Facebook group for the thing to keep everybody in touch, but the chap that ran it was sort of suddenly turned into a mini Hitler type person. And nobody was allowed to disagree with him, or if they had a different point of view, he would block them and get them rid of them. So I stopped that. I still have a vague interest in it, but nothing, I don't do anything about it at all. Next page of my notes. So I left the Facebook group and we stopped doing shamanism. And we did loads of other things. We did a Wicca course that I think Kevin had mentioned, which is about the most boring thing we've ever done together. The chap who ran it, again, was a very nice person, but he had downloaded a lot of stuff from the internet and just sat there reading out the pages. And we sat in our little group and he sat at the front and we were watching the clock, waiting for the time to finish. And Kevin was sort of working nights as he does now, and he had to go straight off to work. So he was a bit more hurry up and finish than I was. But I think Kevin said somewhere else, if you were really interested in Wicca, going to that course would have put you off completely, because really it was nothing and it wasn't cheap either. But anyway, that's beside the point. What else have I got? Oh yeah, I suppose we did the template ceremonies, sacred geometry in Glastonbury, which is a fantastic place. Not as good as it used to be, but it's still a pretty good place to go. It's supposed to be the centre of New Age in England or whatever. And we did those. I think there were 16. Was there 16?
Mike is probably too far away for anybody to hear one. Yes, there were 16.
Thank you. Yeah, we did them not one each year, but I think they bunched them into sort of two or three each year. We went in December, which was nice because Glastonbury had all their little Christmas trees out and it was all pretty. But we finished it of the last lot we went to, just as Kevin found the new presentation, and he was sort of reading up on that. And we were sort of not sure, shall we go to this last one or shan't we? But we thought we'd go anyway, because we'd done the whole lot. And we finished that off. I won't go into what it means because or what it's about, because it's kind of complicated. But I enjoyed the ceremonies just as a sort of emotional thing, I think, spectacle. You know, they twirled this big shape around and turned the lights down, and it was all incense and things. So that was nice. And what else? We've done all sorts of other things. We've been to the Glastonbury Symposium, which is more sort of UFOs and crop circles and Bigfoots and things like that. And we've been to see David Icke a couple of times. Like David Icke, I mean, on the surface, his stuff is interesting. It sort of gets people all sort of, yeah, this is a great thing. But I think we said somewhere else, he doesn't really go on from that. He talks about reptiles and Illuminati and things, but not what we should do about it or if there's a solution. Right? So people are all sort of, every other sentence, they're cheering him, but there's nothing, you know, now what shall we do? So that's it, really. And that's the end of my stuff. There's lots of other things we've done, but I can't remember what.
Okay, I think you covered the main things that we did in the past.
Yes.
You neglected to mention astral projection.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that. Yeah, that was quite a good thing. Yeah, we went down to London and for the weekend. We stayed in a travelodge, which is sort of, anyway. And the chap, Todd Akamesis, I think his name is. Yeah, he did a weekend astral projection course, which I enjoyed, but I couldn't do anything about it. I mean, I so he's had the technique of you shut your eyes, you imagine this, imagine that, and I couldn't do it. But I mean, I could do the shamanic journey and fine, because that was somebody banged a drum very fast, and you imagine going down in a tunnel and imagine this, imagine that. But I could not do astral projection, which I suppose is a different thing completely. But yeah, I enjoyed that weekend. It was nice. Lots of people there. And I can't think of anything else. What can you think of? Okay, have the mic.
Okay, leave the mic right there. And if you wish to speak into it, move your head closer to the mic. Don't steal it. Otherwise, we'll spend all evening or morning chasing the mic back and forth.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think you've covered all the main areas. You know, I went into a little detail about what the sacred geometry was supposed to be about. I won't say about it again now. Suffice is to say, it was supposed to be basically creating the very basis of it. It was supposed to be recreating a paradise once lost on the earth before the reptilians came in and basically made us decode a fake paradigm into our collective reality. It's explained far more in far greater complication than that, but that's the basis of it, I suppose.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, I thought I'd just go through a few quick bullet points of information I've stumbled across as I've been listening to my various quote-unquote conspiratorially orientated sound bites of information across the cyberspace. Yeah. Interesting enough, for all those people who like computers but don't perhaps are not quite so taken with the technology and the possible Wi-Fi and so on and so forth that's associated with them, interestingly enough, it seems some clever individuals have created some more efficient computers. These ones utilise water. Apparently, water has a much greater storage capacity as well. So you might be thinking that the use of water may return computers back to a very rudimentary state of being, but in fact, they could actually be far more enhanced as a result. And much more efficient. In Scotland, as I think a lot of people are aware, because it's been sort of plastered across every media platform, that Scotland is now the first official, it says the first officially recognised smart city. And the smart meters there are being made mandatory as well. you can opt out of them. It's a tad pricey, and probably to the extent that it's beyond the range of the average Joe to afford to opt out, and that's obviously the idea. So Scotland is the first official place in the UK completely immersed, I should say, in 5G. And so a lot of alternative researchers are monitoring the situation there to see what side effects might manifest as a result of this disharmonious electromagnetism. But a lot of people are also suggesting that, obviously, as the 5G smart cities are only in their infancy at the moment, they believe that they haven't been turned on to full capacity. Otherwise, obviously, if people were to see the harmful effects of the 5G, there would be a lot more unrest and outcries to ban this technology. So it's suggested they only have it at a smaller capacity than it is fully capable of at the moment. And once they have everything locked down in the 5G situation, and all the satellites that are still to come online, I think in June, 20,000 of them, according to Elon Musk, when they all come online and we all bathe in it, then the full horror of the situation will be revealed. But by then, it'll be too late. And it could be the case that all life on Earth may be doomed. Because as these mad controllers have said themselves, they basically want zero carbon emissions in order to save the planet. But carbon is an essential element of life, and therefore, in order to have zero carbon emissions, there can be no life. So this suggests either all life on the planet is destined to be destroyed, or robotized, so breathing is no longer required. But along the lines of 5G technology, there was an interesting article I read about synthetic telepathy. Apparently, voices can be created anywhere, including outer space, using this technology, utilizing a specific frequency band. This frequency band can cause the temporal lobes to vibrate and ring, and sounds and voices can be overlaid on top of it, and you can hear these voices in your head. So as you can imagine, this has a lot of potential for putting voices in people's minds, putting voices or sounds in the very skies, and anywhere else they may choose to place them. And this technology, the ability to overlay a frequency with voices or sounds, is not new technology by any stretch of the imagination. It is rather an old technology, probably far older than we are led to believe, but it has been used in wars. As a standard, a plane would fly over an area before a war had ever begun, and would broadcast this synthetic telepathy to discourage war. And this is in fact how they had all the Iraqis surrendering, the ones that emerged from the caves during the Gulf War. And of course, the synthetic telepathy can become subliminal. It's quite enough to go below the threshold of the human hearing range. So obviously, if you can hear a voice, you at least have the conscious option whether to pay attention to it or dismiss it. If it's going in subliminally, it goes straight into the subconscious, and your conscious self is unaware of its presence. And also, the same sort of technology is used for crowd dispersal, raising the frequency a little beyond the range in which the range of the frequency that is needed to carry voices with the synthetic telepathy. Can cause the heating up of the body, causing discomfort and pain. Apparently, the teeth are specifically targeted for some reason.
Oh, that's weird.
So I suppose it's useful for people who don't have any teeth.
Well, yeah.
They're the only ones who may be safe.
It's a bit drastic, though, having to knock your teeth out so you don't get affected.
Don't forget, if you wish to speak, move your head closer to the microphone.
I see.
Otherwise, everyone will miss your pearls of wisdom and your interjections.
Okay.
I wanted to go on now to some... Again, this is information that isn't exactly new. It's been circulating, but some people may be unaware of it, and I find it fascinating. The anomalies of the moon. And a lot of books and theories have been circulating about the strange anomalies of the moon, probably all the way since the 1970s, by all accounts. I believe there were a couple of Russians who wrote a book called Who Built the Moon? These are very renowned Russian scientists, so their information should not be taken lightly. All the information about the moon would point to the possibility, or indeed the fact, of the moon being a hollowed-out planetoid. And following on from this, one might ask, why is there a hollowed-out planetoid sitting there as a moon in our orbit? And in fact, the theory is that this is the modus operandi for a lot of species for traversing the universe. Instead of gallivanting across the universe in the atypical Star Wars type spaceships that you see, they have a tendency to hollow out moons instead and trundle them across the universe like a giant ark. And legend has it this was the means by which the reptilians originally came here, or at least maybe returned here at a later time to disguise their arrival. And indeed, there was a time when a lot of ancient people say in their histories there in fact wasn't a moon. And also in their folklore and legends, there were the reason the Earth is at the angle it is now was because it was turned over by the arrival of the moon. And of course we have the perfect positioning of the moon as well. The eclipses that we have, how the moon is positioned so perfectly that it completely eclipses the sun with the precision of a proverbial Swiss watchmaker. And where the mainstream scientists will tell us the origins of the moon was due to the WAC theory. Apparently, at some time in our past, a Mars-sized planet trundled along, smashed into the side of the Earth, and a chunk broke off, and this became our moon. But apparently the physics do not stack up. And other anomalies include the fact that the moon is far too big for the gravity of the Earth to hold it in its orbit. Apparently, the size of the Earth could only hold a moon with a maximum size of about 30 miles in diameter, but the moon is in fact 2,160 miles in diameter. The moon is in fact bigger than Pluto. So again, that is the argument why it is officially a planetoid and not a moon at all. One NASA scientist is quoted as saying this: "The best explanation for the moon is observational error. It does not exist." Well, thanks for that, boys.
Oh, yes.
Apparently the thing we've been seeing in our skies for untold centuries is just an observational error. There we go.
Yes, and it's strange how, as it rotates and we rotate, we only see one side of it. So the other side, who knows what's there. Oh, didn't China send up a little trundly thing to look at the dark side, the other side of it? It's not dark really, but just recently.
I know that the China have landed recently on the moon for the purposes of possibly colonising it or mining material out of it, but I imagine if they do find any anomalies, we'll be the mere slaves who fund all of this will be the last to know. But yeah, you are correct. We only see one side of the moon. We never see the dark side. And of course, a lot of people have suggested on the dark side, you will find strange structures, towers, evidence of alien settlements, and a lot of people even said there are crashed spaceships, like a spaceship graveyard there. And I believe I saw some images on YouTube or somewhere like that, where it actually showed there were people have been painstakingly going through a lot of the images that NASA provided and actually found great grooves dug out of the surface of the moon to suggest that something had crashed there and skidded along several meters. So that's very, very interesting. And also, to support the contention that the moon is a hollowed out planetoid, the hollow moon theory, is this. In 1969, a crashed lunar module hit the moon. It had an impact equivalent of 1 ton of TNT. This caused the moon to ring like a bell, and the reverberations continued for 30 minutes. When a study was done on the moon's gravitational field, it was strongly considered, based on the readings, that the moon might be hollow. And again, later on, another launch vehicle hit the moon. Doesn't really say much for the drivers of these vehicles, does it? I think they should be given the sack. Anyway, and this other vehicle hit it, this time with 11 tons of TNT. And again, the moon rang like a gong and vibrated for 3.5 hours. It wobbled in a precise way, as though it had gigantic hydraulic dampener struts inside it. Here's some other, even further anomalies. The outer surface of the moon is extremely hard, and it contains minerals like titanium. And the moon rocks have been found to contain processed metals, including brass and mica, and unnaturally occurring elements like uranium-236 and neptunium-237, Uranium-236 is a radioactive waste product and generally found in spent nuclear fuel and the neptunium you get with nuclear reactions as a byproduct. And this suggests, obviously, there's some sort of processes occurring or had occurred on the moon to do with nuclear fusion or nuclear activity, which is obviously not very natural for a hunk of rock floating in outer space. Also, a lot of rocks they found on the moon had titanium, which is used in submarines, jets and spacecraft, interestingly enough.
There was a bit that's been on the TV and on YouTube and everywhere. I think one of the... they're called... Anyway, one of the things going across with people inside. What are they called?
Spaceships?
Well,
rockets?
No, the thing...
Modules?
The lander thing. Anyway, whatever. And they filmed the surface as they were going over, and there was, in one place there was looked like a little chimney sticking out, and it had a little puff of smoke as they went past, which was interesting.
Yeah, and the famous blue light as well that has been seen on the moon, apparently. No end of people have seen it and photographed it, even with long magnification telescopes. And strange, I think they literally call it the blue light. Imaginative,
what
but
else can you
I suppose
it?
yeah, that's seen a lot of times. People have seen the craters lighting up and all sorts of strange activity on the moon. I think at one time there was one photograph made of some huge, great vehicle trundling across the surface, and the estimated size of it was about 20 miles. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to be excavating rocks. So it's very possible that this ancient spacecraft is maintained by possibly robotic sort of type devices that are continuing to work to this day. I even remember a theory where that apparently in ancient times this massive robotic rock mining thing apparently was said to make journeys from the moon and to the earth and back and forth for some reason or another. And apparently the point where it would come to Earth was actually in Japan, and it looked very much like a sort of dragon, And a lot of people suggested this is even where some of the dragonic myths may have come from. The Chinese people would have seen what to appear to them to be a giant flying creature. But that's besides the point. I mean, well, that's another thing anyway, but just an interesting theory that was, I remember, floating about out there. As I was saying, so, what was I saying? Something about...
Yeah, I put you off, didn't I, by saying about that?
Oh, yeah. So, again, no one can account for the titanium in the moon rocks. But obviously titanium and these other strange elements would be considered perfect to protect a giant satellite from temperature, cosmic radiation, and meteor bombardment. They also found lunar rock to be a very poor heat conductor. So take that all into consideration. You have the perfect outer layer, therefore, for a spacecraft. So as I was saying, indications that the moon is an ancient spacecraft constructed to survive the rigors of space. Yes, it would seem that the moon has about a 2/3 mile outer layer. But the outer layer is soft and seems to lay on top of an impregnable inner layer, as all the craters, regardless of the diameter, which would indicate the different size of the meteors, are always of the same depth. Because generally, the bigger the impact, the deeper the crater ought to be. And also on the moon, there's endless pictures and sightings of spherical buildings, things that look like radar dishes and towers, some of which are 1/2 mile in size. And it's quite amusing, really, because if you see some of the images that NASA had got their hands on before people managed to release them on the internet, they've done a rather pathetic job of smudging them out. But what's quite laughable is, rather than having the sense to smudge out the entire picture, they smudged out just the object in question. So basically you have a smudge in the shape of a tower, a smudge in the shape of a spherical building. Which, so even though they smudged it out, you could still see what the object smudged out is actually supposed to represent. Mm-hmm. So in fact, they've actually done nothing to conceal the evidence, just made themselves look like clowns. Yes, and of course we have a lot of movies as well, which depict hollowed out moons. And of course, as we know, in the movies, a lot of information that is portrayed in them is actually very real and accurate. And a lot of it is done for predictive programming purposes. And other times, there are seemingly benevolent aliens who are able to produce movies where they can share information with the humans. For example, there was an episode of Star Trek which had a story, if I remember right, the Star Trek episode had a hollowed out planetoid in it. And this was from the original series of Star Trek. And obviously Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, is of course a massive insider and rubs shoulders with all the controllers and Illuminati type folks. And of course we have George Lucas with his Star Trek Death Star as well. And in fact, the Death Star, as I remember, looks very much like, I think, one of the planets of Saturn or Jupiter, yes, like Mimas or something.
One of the moons.
And don't forget to move your head close to the microphone.
Like one of the moons.
Good. Yeah, it looks remarkably similar to it. It is completely spherical, and it has a big section in it which appears to be the part of the Death Star in Star Trek,
Star Wars,
in which it concentrates beams of lasers and projects one almighty beam that destroys planets and spaceships and stuff. Good. Okay, that's the end of the anomalies of the moon. I thought that'd be very interesting, just to dispel any people's ideas that the moon is something natural, when obviously it is not. Interestingly enough, a lot of people have spoken recently about how the moon is actually seems to be holographic and maybe not even there at all. So maybe once upon a time it was perhaps an ancient spacecraft, but it may well have been moved and replaced by perhaps a fake moon or a holographic moon, as apparently these flat earth theories are simply will not die. And I've always found them very interesting, flat earth theories, and it seems they made a bit of a resurgence now as well, with even more evidence brought to bear. And it's very possible that we do not live on a round spherical planet after all. And in fact, all the planets seem to actually be systems or tiers of or planes that stack one after the other. And we seem and under this particular tier that we are on here, there seems to be an electromagnetic dome, and all the stars and things and planets we see in the night sky are simply almost like a planetarium, where they are simply drawn or projected light images on the surface or the underside of this electromagnetic dome, including the moon. So a lot of people have actually said they've actually seen stars through the moon, which suggests it's holographic. So I thought that was quite strange and interesting. Okay, I wanted to go on to another area here. This may annoy all people who are perhaps into religion and prayer, but to be perfectly honest, it's getting to that time where these people really do need to realise that religions and prayers do nothing but keep you in creation forever, and all they are doing is praying and worshipping the reptilian Callum God which rules all of creation. So this is obviously rather silly, and it's about time they realise this. So, the pointlessness of prayer. This was actually taken from a Skype. I can't remember where it was now. It might have been one of the ones from 2017, but nevertheless, the information is as valid today as it was 2 years ago. And in it, Dwayne would point out about prayer and its pointlessness. And we would start with the what Dwayne usually says about that. If anything in creation you're uncertain to as to whether it makes sense and actually references the real universes or not, you simply would pose the question, if the birds and animals do it. And so, would the birds and animals pray? Well, of course not. So, this is what Dwayne said about this. We are in a bubble in creation. Everything reflects. So basically, anything that you think of, any ideas that you have or thoughts that you project, can basically be reflected. So we are in fact creators from that regard. And people can then think they are indeed even gods in their own minds, and taken to the extreme, this would be exemplified by the governments, people who rule the planet. They take over others and choose to play the god roles. And this is what everybody is subjected to. Of course, naturally, the way around this, the subjugation by the government, is through your real awareness. And this they cannot curtail unless you allow it. And that would, of course, be a personal decision on your part. The prayer idea was created to get people to beg from others, and this is why the gods were created. And the demonstrations, the protests towards the government, are pointless too. This is simply another form of begging. As for lifetimes, people have been taught to beg, and that's what prayer is, effectively, begging. If we make requests of life, depending on what it is, the guides and life can step in if it makes sense. If the sincerity and intent is pure, and it makes sense with the whole of life. Talking about religion, all of religion is sacrifice. You are to sacrifice yourself. But they make it pretty to make it look like something it is not. And as I said at the beginning, the analogy you would always draw from is if the animals and birds would do this. And Again, the animals and animals and birds would not pray, and they certainly would not choose to sacrifice themselves. And so prayer and worship, the people who do this are the ones destroying the environment through subconscious agreement. The birds and animals don't destroy their environment, but the people have been taught to do this as a means of control. So each individual must decide how they agree or not to the system. And rebellion isn't really a feasible option, as it brings in violence and it doesn't make sense to do so. We are all brought up with these ideas. We go along with the social behaviour of things as we know no better. But then we begin to analyse and see what makes sense, like the sun shining. So it does not make sense to comply with this world when individuals are given propaganda to join the military and attack others. Other countries as an example or idea, because basically the idea of joining armies and fighting battles is to destroy something to have peace. It's an inversion, it doesn't make any sense. The world will never change. There might be a little perk here and there, maybe, but trying to live peacefully within it is something that is not really our reason for being here. And even if you do eke out a peaceful spot somewhere in this mess, somebody's liable to come along and disrupt it. This is how the world is. We are here to recognise what we don't need from all that is here, in order to become more aware and to recognise what is real. So we do need this experience. Then when recognition is established, we play our part and earn our way. So the prayer idea is still here. It's been here for thousands of years, thousands of lifetimes, and the world's exactly the same. All the systems, education and science is still here as we return here over and over again. And prayer isn't restricted to the church. Everyone is worshipping and praying by the very fact that they are in the matrix and agreeing to the systems of control and restriction. They are adoring creation with all of its thrills. Again, it is a choice to do so. It is neither bad nor good, but the end result is generally disregarded in people's minds. Everyone thinks the world is getting better, but it's been created a particular way, so it is a distortion. And there are ways to create things that don't cause distortion, but it hasn't been done yet. Trying to add to a distorted system is difficult, and the system isn't interested, because the system is about control. Everything established here is for control, not for a better life, not to make people happy, but for control. And it is disguised. So anyone can pray, and you can have what you pray for, and it can work. It's a mind reflection. Creating ideas, bringing them into the physical, but the fact that people have been here for millions of lives suggests this process has gotten them nowhere but in creation. If you do what you've always done, you'll get what you've always got. You will grow old, get you here, and then you'll return and do the same things over and over again. So the key is to focus on the isness life is, and to stand real with that and take the risk, and that's how you eventually free yourself from all of this, or you agree to creation and stay here. So prayer is a choice. It's not good or bad. Everyone has the right to choose. Nothing is negated. It's simply choice. But you see what the world is choosing. And if you look to the real side, you will see that everyone is running into future darkness and it's getting worse. It's all deceptive appearance. It seems to be okay, but in fact the opposite. And this is how the system was created. And even the controllers can't see the decline of their creation. They simply want to control others. And the control is ramping up and getting more so every single moment. Oh, that's the end of the prayer bit. So. Anyway. Where was I? Yeah, there was an interesting bit about... I didn't headline this bit of information, but I it was about... I believe it's about reincarnation. Yeah. As you pass over, the ideas and attachments that you have when you do will bring you back. You will encounter friends and family over there and feel that it's fine. Everyone's together again, but as time goes by, they will fade back to a position on the physical once more. So, there was a bit about the blanking of the mind exercises as well. There was a bit mentioned about that because a lot of people are into mindfulness and they speak about how this is actually a beneficial thing. And it can be an aid to real awareness. And through the mindfulness exercises, people can indeed reach what they refer to as nirvana, or the void. And this is, in fact, the deep, dark border. So people will be pleased with themselves that they have conquered the mind, and this is so. But at this point, there is a temptation, and it is this. You have the option to become a black or white magician, as the mind has been stilled. So these techniques of mindfulness and mind-controlling techniques can be utilised, but it is not the ultimate position. You can be blank of mind, but while you are here, the idea was, in fact, to creatively do something, not just wander around with a blank mind all the time. Some people who do reach this state of mindfulness, or able to blank the mind, tend to retreat to isolated locations. But again, the idea is to stand real and recognise yourself as a being of real light with other real beings, and mutually support each other, not just retreat to some cave in some forgotten wilderness and pretend it, nothing, everything is a hunky-dory. The idea is, as I was saying, to support each other and share a reference to the real universes, and that's the best that can be done here due to the circumstances. Because, of course, this place, the circumstances being the endless agitation, and it certainly is a very tough place to survive here. So recognizing your real awareness and years is what life is all about. And the whole reason for blanking of the mind, the practitioners who do this, was to offset the cause and effect karma. But the individuals don't realise they are real universes, that life is an isness and it's here and now. And by going through the process, the karma dissolves on its own, as the individual becomes aware of the real universes, and it's here and now, no travelling necessary, it's an isness. So the paths that work along mindfulness lines are all about dealing with cause and effect karma and getting out of the reincarnational cycle, but with awareness it becomes automatic. So when people do step over, they pass over, they are aware of where they are, and especially the real guidance, if they've chosen to make the connection with the real universes and recognise and their real awareness. But those who are still locked into their personal selves with lots of attachments to situations and people and relationships, etc., they can go no further than themselves. They hold themselves here. And eventually, If they don't move on and utilise what they have learned, then they will fade back. It's all about awareness and holding the awareness focus. Life is about itself, and not what we think it is. And once you recognise what it is, you have your real freedom, standing real with other real beings of light that's beyond all of the five bodies. Okay. Let me find my notes here. There was something I was going to.
Note shuffling sound effects.
Yeah. I should have put these in a better order, really. Oh, so they're sort of they're all, like, all over the place.
And they seem to be all different colour inks as well.
Oh, yes. Okay, I wanted to give Gwen the opportunity to share her recent revelations in regards to the medication she was taking. Well, she shared on Skype a few weeks ago how that when she changed the time of the day in which she took her medication, she actually found a remarkable thing happened. So, Gwen, would you like to share this happenstance?
You've almost said it, haven't you?
Yes, but I didn't say what remarkable thing occurred.
This is true. Yes, I'm on sort of about five lots of medication, not just for the fun of it, but it is important that I take it for various reasons. I was taking my stuff, I have about five pills I've got to eat at night, and I was having them at night and then went to bed. And I found that although I dreamt a lot, I hardly ever remember them in the morning. It was just like, yes, I have had a dream, but I didn't know what it was. But I decided, I think I missed one evening by mistake, so I decided to take my pills during the day instead. And I found that when I went to bed, I had really vivid dreams, and I could remember my dreams a lot better. So we were saying, Kevin and I, we were wondering if these medications, I mean, they're all sort of chemicals and whatnot that they give you, you don't know what they are, and you don't know what the side effects are really, whether they are deliberately done to sort of dumb down your mind so that you don't dream so much and you don't remember it so much, because Kevin's taking nothing and he's having fantastic dreams, as you've heard in the things before. So that was my interesting thought.
Okay. Yeah, Gwen shared that on our UK Skype a couple of weeks ago, and Dwayne's response was very interesting. I wrote some notes down here about what he said in response to this. And Dwayne would say this. We get a mindset going according to the authorities, and an individual agrees. But if we do something different, something else happens. The drugs basically, unless needed, are destroyers. They destroy everything in your body. And people can in fact die on them. The guides won't always show you something. You have to decide to see something else. And so, a step will manifest. As an example, by not taking the medication before bed. Drugs dumb down the senses. As a risk taker, one could maybe try to get along without them, to take the risk to see what happens. Again, that is a choice. Everyone is scared into thinking that these drugs and vaccinations are essential, that they may die without them. But in fact, you're more likely to die with them, get autism, and overall, the drugs are destroyers. Once in a while, it is fine to take them, but not to live on them, as they do indeed dumb down the senses. So, as in Gwen's case, a risk was taken. She took a step to change the order of when she took the drugs, and the result was plain to see. You are always the experiencer, and it's up to the person to decide how far they will go. So not only are they the experiencer, they are also the decider. And of course, when it comes to drugs, there are natural alternatives to drugs too. You can look to the real side and see what is shown. And also, on the physical side here, the passing dream. If you take the risk, something else will always show up. But if you stick to the emotional and mental routines you've been doing all along, then nothing will change. And so I thought that was quite interesting. I wrote that down there and thought I'd repeat it there. And yeah, because ever since you've finished, you changed the medication, you found you've been having lots of dreams and things all of a sudden, where at one time you found you were unable to dream at all or have no recollection of them whatsoever. And, yes. Okay. I wanted to share some of my dream experiences I've had recently. This wasn't a dream, in fact. It was something that occurred during my waking reality. Well, I call it waking reality, what occurred in the physical passing dream. Nevertheless, I was on my way to work. Something suddenly flew over me. It was late in the evening, about 10 p.m. or so, so it was pitch black. And so, from that, it can be determined that no birds would be responsible for whatever it was that flew over me, unless it was an owl.
Yes.
But even if that were the case, it cast a huge shadow across me and the car, so it was something of considerable size. I also had the sense it was very low. I almost imagined that I could have reached up and touched it. Obviously, when it cast the shadow across me in the car, and I had the sense of it flying over me, I instantly looked up. But alas, I could see no sign, and the sky was completely devoid of anything that could be responsible for whatever it was that flew over me. And that was the end of that. And when I shared that on Skype, Dwayne said the reason, what it actually was simply he determined that it was the dark side trying to scare me. And so it seems that is one of the things that he likes to do for people who are going along with their process of becoming more aware and recognising the is. It will periodically attempt to put you off, send strange creatures to frighten and terrify you, and all sorts of oddities to torment you in your day-to-day activities. But you must hold firm and disregard these things, because you must realise that you have the protection of the guides. If you maintain the connection and your intent is so, they will always keep an eye out on you and keep all the nasties at bay. It actually reminds me a bit of an experience I had before. One time ages ago, when I was into my shamanic practices, I actually went to the woods. And it was at night time, probably in the early hours, and I was walking to the woodland. Suddenly, a huge mass suddenly detached itself from the ground and it soared into the sky. And it was very bird-like in its mannerisms and appearance. And in fact, it was much larger than an average bird. I would say it was probably about 30 feet in diameter. As it rose into the sky, it would dissipate and vanish before my eyeballs. And that was what I saw from that. So back then, obviously, I hadn't come across the new presentation, but it sort of reminded me a little of that. So I didn't have a sense of fear from whatever it was. So I've no idea if it was the dark side even then. Nevertheless, that's an experience very similar to that, I thought. Here's another dream I had. I was driving to work. There was something wrong with my car. It needed immediate attention. So I decided to go to a garage. For some reason, the workers there were not your atypical workers. They were little gnome-like characters. I was a little suspicious of their intentions. But nevertheless, I chose to leave my car in their hands, and then I would return a couple of hours later to retrieve my car from them. I then attempted once again to go to work and found my car was in an even worse state than it was before. Obviously, to my annoyance, and I was unable to get to work that day. After I woke up, the impression that I had was that as with most dreams, the cars can generally be taken as being your vehicle or your body, your bodily vehicle. So if I take the car as representing my personal vehicle, then in this dream, my personal vehicle was in fact sabotaged, which prevented me getting to work. This suggested that I may well have agreed upon a situation in which there could be sabotage done to prevent me getting to work. Sabotage of my personal vehicle. Maybe one can be so cheesed off with their job that they do, in fact, agree on a life level beyond the physical to allow oneself to suffer some sort of attack that will debilitate the body and thus prevent you from being able to go to work as a result. Or possibly it was a demonstration that if I keep doing a certain thing that is obviously is not in my best interest, it does not make sense, and it does not make sense from the perspective of the real of life. As an example, a job, then you may find your vehicle or your body can be compromised. Okay. This next dream was quite interesting too. There was an advert on the television, and it was advertising a shampoo or something along those lines, some sort of a product or other. But the commercial, the product was accompanied by a song, as most commercials are, but in this case, the song was the New You song, and then the Do New You song. And I thought, oh, that's quite a good thing, in fact, because basically the new is getting promoted on a potentially commercial, wide and global scale. But then, pondering it a little further, I was thinking perhaps it was a dream demonstrating that the controllers may attempt or be intending to steal the new you and the do you and drag it down into the astral and the physical by affiliating it with literal physical things such as shampoo, and also attaching ideas and distortions to it. And so if they were successful in this endeavor and they dragged it down into the physical and astral level by attaching distorted ideas and thoughts and ideas to it, it would become now then the domain of the physical and astral only. It would no longer be a reference for the real universes. And in such a case, it may be a situation where Dwayne would have to change the new use sound and call it something else and alter it in some way in which it would become new once again and reference the real universes and not be now the property of the reptilians. And I think originally, and I was reading earlier somewhere that the original word was new, and then Dwayne added the U, and then I think Rebazar added the other two U's to it, which became new U. I think on the last radio show as well, I was speaking about how he's had to change and alter the language used over time, because again, the controllers grab a hold of all the wordage and the phrases and the terminology, and they attach their distortions to it and drag it into the physical and astral level. And such examples such as is, where initially it was just the is, and then they called the terrorist organization ISIS, and so Dwayne had to change it to the all is. And also the International Space Station is called ISIS as well, and things like that, and how he's had to alter other words over time. So it's very possible that somewhere down the line, the new presentation would have to go through a transitional phase and change its terminology all again. But so Dwayne and the guides and the real universes and the is always has to keep ahead of the controllers and their devious intentions and dastardly objectives. Things like that.
Sounds a bit dramatic.
I've had a few encounters recently in my dreams with very dark, twisted and dubious individuals. The most recent of which was a strange character who went by the name of Bobby. He was a balding man and heavy set. And he was very abusive and very aggressive. And during the dream, I was with another person that I know on the physical level, and we were both subjected to his malign intent. And he would chase us around and subject us to all sorts of torments, as I was saying. At one point, he chased us out into the open, but it seemed we were to be saved by a very unlikely source. Because as he was bearing down upon us with his evil actuality, suddenly the sky was filled with spacecraft. They reminded me a little bit of Maltesers. They were sort of brown and spherical and seemed to pulse. The only difference were they were sort of purple in colour, so I suppose maybe more along the lines of gooseberries, but they reminded me of Maltesers.
Purple.
I don't know, whatever.
Blueberries.
Blueberries, maybe, yeah. But again, they were completely smooth, spherical, except they were purpley, so they sort of reminded me of, I suppose, purple Maltesers then, I suppose. And they started zapping Bobby with laser fires and sent him on his way. And then later, I found myself in a lab, and this scientist had put me under some sort of trance. I went deeper and deeper into this trance, unable to extricate myself from it. And then I would wake up from this dream. And when I woke up from this dream, I found myself paralysed on the bed. And I imagine it would be very similar to the sort of experiences that people have described when they've been abducted by aliens, when they find themselves paralysed and unable to move. Of course, a lot of the scientific folks have said that paralysis is a natural part of the sleep cycle, and if you happen to wake up prematurely, your body can still be paralysed, for otherwise we would act out our dreams while we're sleeping. But of course, people do that as well, as in sleepwalkers and such. But nevertheless, paralysis is one of the things that the aliens subject people to keep them under control. And as I was saying, I found myself paralysed on the bed, and Bobby was still in the room. And bear in mind, this was on the physical at the time. It was no longer in the dream. And he stood there leering at me, and who knows what he was intending to do. And what's quite interesting with these sort of dreams, when you do see something on the physical, that is actually, you're actually seeing it with your awareness, and so you're more likely seeing something on the real side, except it is, you're also able to see it while you're in your physical state of being. So it's very likely that no one else would have been able to see this individual. It's also very possible that if he had attacked me, I may have well have bared actual physical scars, but people would not have been able to see the perpetrator of them, but they would have simply have seen the result, the physical afflictions that the phenomena would have caused. And again, you hear a lot of this on some sort of ghostly encounters where people actually witness scars and cuts actually manifesting on people's bodies as though the assailant were invisible. And anyway, as I said, I was paralysed on my bed and Bobby was standing there. I had the presence of mind to start singing the new UU song, and so I did. This had the effect of breaking the paralysis, and also Bobby would fade away. And so, the new UU is not only the connection to the real universes, but it is also a means by which you can protect yourself from all manner of creepy individuals. And in this case, it seemed to not only send Bobby from my midst, but it also had the effect of breaking my paralysis. So it makes you wonder, if indeed people were abducted by aliens, were they to sing the new UU, would that somehow manage to allow them to escape from their predicament? Of course, a lot of abductions are actually, a lot of them are based on agreement. A lot of the people don't realise they've actually subconsciously agreed to the abductions for various reasons. But nevertheless, it seems that the new UU is a cure for all, including the breaking of paralysis. And the dream was actually very similar to a dream I had a couple of weeks before. Having a sip of water there. And this dream before, I encountered another individual. And he was, he was another sort of evil, twisted type character. He reminded me very much of the character out of the Stephen King book It, Pennywise the Clown. And me and a group of people were subjected to all sorts of torturous abuse. And on this occasion, I mean, on previous occasions, when I've had encounters with dangerous individuals or situations, the guides have stepped in and helped me. On this case, they didn't appear, and so I had to suffer at the hands of this creature. And after I woke up, I had the impression that this experience was allowed to unfold simply to almost test how I would react to such a traumatic situation. Because as the awareness expands, you start to view situations more objectively and not take them quite so personally, and then you don't apply so much emotion to it and traumatize yourself and have to have years of therapy, etc., etc. As in this case, when I woke up, I simply brushed off the experience and thought that was very interesting, a bit funny, but nevertheless, and thought nothing of it. So it was possible the situation was allowed to occur simply for that reason, to prove that I'm now in a place where I don't necessarily need to concern myself with these experiences. I can just go through them and come out much stronger as a result. And also, when one continues with their process of becoming more aware, they are willing to go through all that is needed to get to the real universes. And some of the experiences can be a little bit daunting at times. But that is the way of the risk taker and the adventurer, that you must face all of life and all the creeps that might be lurking out there. Actually, speaking of the It character, Dwayne was saying how it was very interesting that they actually used the name It in the Stephen King book as well, because in the original, in some of his first new books, and also some of Paul Twitchell's books, he would refer to the real universe, to the All Ears, as It. So it was interesting how that Stephen King took this word and used it to represent this most evil of characters. And again, this is another example of how the controllers and the cabal and all those sort of characters try and seize all the words and terminology and bring them down to the level of the gutter, into the astral and the physical level, which necessitates then the need to change the terminology and the wordage. And of course, with a one might think, well, Stephen King can't be an evil controller, can he? Surely not. But it seems that a lot of people who are in a position on this level of life where they are going to be very influential to vast swathes of people, as in the most famous and well-renowned authors, etc., etc., because they are in that position, they were obviously allowed to be in that position by those that control the world, knowing full well the material that's going to reach all the minds of the slaves. And so it's very feasible that the top authors, the top actors, the top this and the top that, whoever in positions where they're going to influence and affect millions and millions of peoples, are very much likely to be reptilians and controllers themselves. So undoubtedly their books are going to contain information that are going to be in keeping with the agenda to keep people in a state of unawareness. And so it's very likely that such authors and filmmakers will seize on the wordage used by Dwayne and the guides and add distortion to it and drag it down to the physical and the astral. But anyway, okay. Here's a little fun dream I had. As I say, part of the process is not simply having the knowledge or learning the material and so on and so forth. An imperative part of it is to practice being in a state of awareness. And ultimately, I suppose the ultimate objective would be to be able to maintain this state constantly. And so periodically I will practice the state being in being in awareness. I will stop thinking and put my emotional and mental body to one side. And as a result of that, I have all sorts of interesting experiences. So I can certainly testify that this practice does produce all sorts of remarkable experiences and results. And so it is well worth pursuing and encourages an individual to keep going along with this process. On this case, in this case, when I was practicing my state of awareness, I was lying in my room, and all of a sudden my view would switch to the real side, and I was flying through space at hyper speeds, to such an extent that all the stars were streaking by me like streaks of light. And if you can imagine the Star Trek and Star Wars episodes, when the spaceships go into hyperdrive and all the stars streak by them, it was akin to that. And there I was, flying through space at great speeds, and occasionally my view would switch back to the physical, then switch back to the real side where this was occurring. So as I said, it's an example of what can be of one of the things that I've experienced while being in a state of awareness. I've had all sorts of other strange experiences too. I've seen all sorts of strange creatures, and one of the things I have seen whilst practicing my state of awareness is I'll see strange amorphous blobs floating around my room, like strange amoeba, little squid-like creatures. A very common thing that I see is actually sort of spider-like creatures, and that's quite a common one that I encounter, sort of various shapes and colours and sizes of spiders. And then if I focus on them too much, my physical personal self comes to bear, and usually it will fade away. But anyway, I had some other notes here, but unfortunately I've scrambled up the order of my notes, and there's no way that I can put them back in order without having to take a little time out. But we have reached the hour and 15 minute mark, so that's about dead on what I was intending, about an hour and 15 to an hour and 30. So unless Gwen has anything further to share?
Not really this time, no.
Okay then, in that case, that will wrap it up for this show. And so the last thing we will do is we will sing the new you you. So, okay. New you, 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 you. And there we go. So, thank you all for listening. And as I say, unfortunately, we can't seem to get go live with the radio show. So the only alternative we have is to upload it. So in that regard, it means nobody can actually phone into the show and be a guest, unfortunately. But this is the only other alternative we have. But we'll keep trying to see if we can rectify what went wrong, and have it as actual live show. But in the meanwhile, we'll keep on putting them out as uploads. So farewell for now.